You guys, go away. Stop. I'm not giving you more treats for a minute.
Welcome to Geeks Without God with Molly Glover, Nick Glover, and Tim Wick.
We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God. We don't recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks. Geeks Without God.
This week on Geeks Without God, we are finally tackling Andor Season 2 on Disney Plus. We are going to spoil the shit out of it, but just a quick preview, we mostly liked it.
We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God.
Calibrate your enthusiasm, for it is time for Geeks Without God. I am your host, Molly Glover, joined as always by my co-hosts, Tim Wick.
My enthusiasm has been calibrated.
And Nick Glover.
It was me. I was a spy the whole time.
Oh my gosh. Oh wow. You gave him to Leia. We are here to talk about Andor Season 2. We loved the show the first season. We talked about it on a previous episode. I'm sure you can find that somewhere.
Yeah.
And we're going to talk about season two because it was really great. And that's the end of it.
That's it.
It's only
going to
be two seasons. It runs right up to the beginning of Rogue One, pretty much. And so we're going to spoil the shit out of it. So if you haven't seen it, I mean, you kind of have because, like, what happens happened. But the bits and bobs of how they got there, you don't necessarily know. So you might want to just come back to this after you've watched Andor Season 2. It's worth a watch. It's very short.
It's on, on Disney Plus. Pretty quick watch. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. And let's take it away. So we come back Season 2. Season 1 ends. And, people are hurt. People are kidnapped. Cassian has to go into hiding, and we start up season two, and it's 1 year later.
Right, basically. And it ends with Cassian basically saying to Luthen, you know, either kill me or bring me in.
Yep.
So
and I cannot remember his friend's name who gets kidnapped by the ISB basically and like tortured to Bix.
Yeah.
Bix is being tortured. We get to see in this season we get to see a lot more of the ISB. The inner workings with Dedra and Cyril, who is now her right-hand man, kind of. Like, it seems like
Her boyfriend.
Her boyfriend, yeah.
Asset.
Yeah, and they are...
Boy asset.
They're together, and they have a very IKEA apartment, and it's in Coruscant. And, you know, because she makes money, honey, so she takes care of him. And, yeah.
He's gotten a few promotions. He's moving up. Up in the whatever it is he does department.
We didn't get a ton of new characters. We got a lot of characters we know from movies and such, and then a lot of like more information on, you know, I guess like maybe a deepening of the bench of the ISB guys, right? And
yeah.
Some new spies, but not really. We learn a lot more. Oh, and then Mothma's daughter is now going full bore into the weird arranged marriage stuff. So there's a lot happening at the start.
The first episode, I don't want to say it was like a filler or a waste of an episode, but it definitely felt like a pace reset to me. It's the first like episode or two he's stuck on that planet.
Yes.
With the ship, with the fucking world's worst rebels.
The whole
galaxy's worst rebels.
You can't kill me. I'm the pilot you need. Well, we're going to kill you if you don't do what you want. No, you're not. Like, yeah, and so it's
two episodes of leftist infighting.
Yeah.
It's
a little too real, isn't it?
Yeah.
I felt like it served like a mechanical purpose to the storytelling and the pacing. But it wasn't as interesting to me. It was still incredibly fucking good.
It's more like establishing where these characters are right now. Which I mean, I think was useful, but things get moving pretty fast after episode two. It jumps forward a year, just like every third episode or so.
Yeah. That was, I think, the most surprising thing about this season was how I was thinking, oh, wow, they might even do three seasons when season one ended, because it seemed like there was so much time left in the calendar. before we were going to get to the events of Rogue One. And then they were like, they took that possibility away by being like, another year goes by, six more months, 12 more months.
Yeah. Well, if I have a disappointment, it is apparently they had five seasons planned of the show. And they kind of decided that they just couldn't. It was too much work to make that happen. They weren't going to be able to get it done the way they wanted to get it done. So they condensed it down to two. But I feel like a lot of those jumping forward points are almost like where a season would have happened.
Yeah.
You know, like I watched this. We actually rewatched season one and then season two with my kids. And they both expressed extreme disappointment that we got K2SO for basically an episode. If it had been in five seasons, we probably would have gotten K2SO for a full season.
Yeah. Which, I will say the getting of K2SO was a fantastic scene.
Yeah.
Just absolutely smashing.
Crush him with the truck or whatever.
Yeah, but just how it just really shows how unkillable those droids are.
They are
They are just murder machines, right? Like we saw a little bit of that in season one when, you know, Cassian gets grabbed by the K2SO bot, that's their droid that's like, you know,
security droid. Is it?
I know. I think so. That's just like, stop resisting, you're under arrest and all that. But
detain this prisoner.
I agree. I was disappointed there wasn't more K2SO, though. I do really love the droid in this show. I can't remember its name, but it's probably one of my favorite droids in all of Star Wars.
The little red guy?
No, isn't there another one that's... am I thinking of a different show? I might be confusing my Star Wars stuff up. I thought there was one that was like, don't tell me how it's going. And it was like, do you want to know how many instances in which we fail?
Oh no, that was K2SO.
Okay,
it was
okay.
Like, do you want to know how many regulations we just broke? No, it was 17.
Okay, it was 16. K2SO. Okay.
Yeah.
The person I was thinking that was a different bot, but it was just his personality.
It's kind of a more cynical C-3PO.
Yeah.
Like, never tell me the odds.
Yeah, yeah.
Kind of a thing.
B2EMO was the other droid in this series.
B2EMO.
Right.
Because he's a sad boy.
Yeah, he is an emo boy, yeah. The droid with PTSD and
a mean stutter.
Yeah. I don't know. I felt like every time they cut back to Bix and Brasso, I think, and I cannot remember the other guy's name. It's like Willon, I think. The three, Bix and then the big guy and then the young kid, who are all kind of like living together in like a rebel, you know, half safe house, half apartment. And when they're waiting for Cassian, and there was, I guess Bix was so badass. And I understand that the goal was to show how affected she was by her kidnapping and torture and everything. But it felt like Bix just was damaged the whole time. And so like this main woman character was just damaged goods, you know,
other than when her and Andor killing her torturer.
Well, her killing her torturer, but that was also just a trauma response.
It wasn't
like she was like, I'm gonna set out and figure this out. It was a...
He also had a baby, Molly.
That's right. I forgot her life was fixed at the end because she had a baby.
There was a lot more Mon Mothma in this.
Yeah.
Yes.
Too.
Mon Mothma at the rave. Yeah. Mon Mothma at the wedding dance.
Getting drunk.
It all go.
Yeah.
I think we can all agree that that friend of hers deserved to die.
Yeah. Oh yeah, yeah. I was mostly disappointed that we didn't really get to find out how. I mean, you didn't need to know, right? It's not important for the story, but it's kind of like, did he get killed on the way home, and they faked a crash with his pseudo space car, or how did it go?
Princess just Diana style.
Yeah.
This season, kind of timeline wise, weaves in and out of all of the seasons of Rebels, the animated
show.
To the point where, when Mon Mothma is fleeing after her speech about the massacre, that picks up with the Rebels episode Secret Cargo, where they are the ones that like pick her up to get her the fuck out of there, and I think maybe even deliver her to Yavin, or hand her off to the people that deliver her to Yavin, maybe. Mm-hmm. But yeah, which is interesting because that means, like, I mean, as we know from you know, Rogue One in Episode 4, but Princess Leia is very active at this time in the Rebellion as well, and she's not, I don't think she even gets like a mention or a shout out in this whole season, and I'm fine with that, but I was a little surprised that there wasn't a nugget of something.
Even just her, even, I mean, we saw her dad, I guess that maybe was what they thought the nugget was, like we saw Bail.
Yeah, but Leia ought to have been there because she's a senator as well.
Yeah.
And they have an actress who played young Leia in Obi-Wan who may have been about the right age to play Leia. Yeah.
No, way too young still.
No, she's way, yeah, she's, I think that actor is like 11 at this point, and Leia at this point is about 18, 19.
By the time Mon Mothma is giving her speech and fleeing, Leia is almost the same age as she is in New Hope.
Yeah.
For sure. Yeah.
I really want to just commend them. I think casting Benjamin Bratt as young Bail Organa was a very inspired casting. He was great. I think that he is a good choice. He had a youthful vigor about him that you could kind of see this is the guy that would inspire Leia to go into not just politics, but rebel politics specifically, right? And try to, I don't know. I thought he did a good job with the role.
Wasn't he? I mean, he was Bail in the prequels, wasn't he?
Yeah. No, Jimmy Smits.
Oh, okay.
Yep. Who's right. Way old by now.
Yeah,
so
he's pretty old.
He couldn't have played it. So they did a good job with that because it's like, who else are you going to, but he, you know, I thought he did a good job with it. I'm glad they didn't try to like cast a non-Latino actor or something. Right. And be like, Bale's white now. Like, you know, so that was really good. The Gorman stuff in particular, I want to talk about because I think that the way that was to me, the most interesting part of this season, was the way that the ISB Krennic identifies that the mineral they need to continue the Death Star work is on Gorman, that they, in order to do it, they're going to have to basically just crack the planet like an egg and get it all out. And so the way that they have to do that is to exterminate the people. And how do you do that without making everybody think that you're the bad guys? Like, start a shit-talking campaign about the Gorm and how, haven't they always just been a little stuck up? Like, when you think about it, haven't they always just been? And the way that they talked about that subtle propaganda, I thought was very cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. The whole thing, I think there's, you know, in a lot of the way that they've been pointing out how the Jedi Order wasn't all that great, it starts to be, you have to get back to the idea that the Empire, for all that, like the Jedi Order may not have been perfect, and all that the Old Republic may not have been, or the New Republic or whatever may not have been perfect. Mm-hmm. The Empire is horrible.
Yeah.
You know, because they basically decide, well, we need this mineral, and, you know, we could probably figure out how to get this mineral out of the planet without cracking the planet open by an egg, but that takes a lot more time and a lot more work. So we just need to kill them all. That's what we need to do.
Yep.
Deep substrate foliated
calcite.
Yeah, it's Death Star materials.
Well, and I also like that, you know, they really, this, that the Death Star is this secret project, so secret that it's beyond secret. It is secret even to the upper echelon.
Seven people know or
and that when Dedra finds out, she just pretty much looks sick to her stomach for the rest of the entire show. Like she is glad. You can tell she's a woman who's being ruined by ambition. Like, she wants to be there. She wants the power, but also she is clearly sick to death of having to hold the secret, and it's bothering her.
I thought the secret and what was crushing her was knowing that they were just going to like genocide the Gorman and destroy the whole planet, not the Death Star itself.
No, but they're doing it because of the Death Star, and you can't tell anybody.
I don't think she knew that part. I mean, she had the emails that she didn't delete or whatever, but I don't.
She knew what was happening. She was brought in.
She knew there was a project.
Krennic yeah. talking about the Emperor's new weapon.
Well, no, talking about the big plan to get the Kalkite out of Gorman. But I don't think they ever talked about it being like Death Star.
Yeah,
well,
no, she figured out the Death Star on her own later in the season near the end.
It's for the Emperor's new power plan is the lie that they tell even their own people.
I think you're misunderstanding. I'm just saying that as shorthand. I'm saying that the fact that she was brought into this upper like secret part was clearly not what she was hoping when she got there, right? Yeah. That it was not making her happy.
Well, it wasn't to provide security. It wasn't to put down the rebels. It wasn't to do any of that. It was to wipe out a people and strip mine a planet. And that kind of seemed to be the thing that actually broke her in the end.
And it was taking her away. It was taking her away from finding Axis, which was really what she wanted to do.
Yeah.
I'm disappointed that she didn't die and Cyril died. I feel like Cyril was just trying to be like just trying to make some woman in his life happy his whole life, right? And like, you know, and just trying to be the best he could be, and she truly had the heart of a fascist. Like she really was doing the evil shit and agreeing to it, whereas he was just sort of being dragged along. I don't know.
He was a true believer.
I mean,
all first season.
I mean, her not dying, her end is pretty bad. You know, she's
in jail for life. Right?
She's in jail for life. She's going to be worked to death the same way we saw in season one, that's what they're going to do with these people, that she's going to be worked until she dies. And it's this whole idea of when you are on the side of the fascists, you're always one step away from being the next person to fall, you know. We rewatched Rogue One after we finished season two, and of course Krennic is in at the end of season two of Andor. Krennic looks like he's just on top of everything, and by the end of Rogue One Krennic himself has fallen and is trying to save himself before he eventually dies in the process. And I think that's kind of where her character arc was going, to show that fascism slowly eats itself. That you know, the only person who wins in a fascist society is the person at the top.
And even then,
absolute loyalty, will buy you time as long as you're useful and not a convenient scapegoat or an obstacle in any way, right?
Yeah.
I mean, shit, you're seeing it right now with Laura Loomer turning on Marjorie Taylor Greene, right? Like, as we're recording this day, it's you're only on their team as long as you're it's worth it for them, and then you're another person to dispose of.
I do want to circle back to what you were saying about, well, Cyril is a true believer. Yes, but in the Empire and in, I would say, there's, as we know, there's so many layers to the Empire, right? In the sense of but that top shiny surface layer that I think Cyril was a true believer in is that layer of, this is good for everyone. We are like the trains run on time. The streets are clean. Like crime is down on planets that are under Imperial control. And as long as you're a good person who isn't trying to break the law, then you're fine, which is a very pervasive attitude in America right now, which is as long as you're being lawful and being good and you're not doing anything wrong, then you have nothing to worry about. There will be nothing that could happen to you. So just don't worry about it. I support the police because I am a good citizen.
Yeah.
And
law and order. If they don't want to get arrested, just don't break any crimes.
Exactly. And so I think that like that's the layer that he's a true believer in. And then as he gets more in, when he gets excited because he gets to do spy shit and he gets to go to Gorman and
with the woman he loves
Yeah.
Who stands up to his mom.
Yeah, yeah. Who stands up to his mom and like tells her to fuck off and if she can't be nice and like, you know, so, and he's going to go and he gets to make friends and he gets to be considered a cool dude. And like, it's very exciting. And then he starts to realize more what's happening. And I don't think he got a chance to be changed. I think that's why I'm sad he died, is because there was a real opportunity there for the rebels to have gotten an amazing asset from him. And
until he saw Andor, and then it was all over because he was just like, that's that motherfucker who escaped justice. And all he was concerned about.
He killed two people.
Cops, Molly.
Yep.
Cops.
Oh, I know. He killed two cops.
Two kind of people.
Right.
Legally.
People.
But yeah, I think I like season one better. Just because I didn't really care about where it was going to link up with the canon. Like that wasn't super exciting or important to me. Not like I didn't care at all, but I felt like the story that gets told in season one is so important to us now and feels like, the early Star Wars stuff where it's, you know, really making an overt statement about current situations, right? And that the link up season was great. But I feel like the stories it was telling are stories I already know, you know, whereas the first one, I think people needed to hear a lot more of that.
Yeah. The last episode, much like the first episode, felt like a lot of it was dedicated to mechanics of, like, okay, now we have to hook it up to Rogue One.
Oh, that's like, where he got the gun. And like,
kind of like the stuff that they did in the Solo movie that felt the most awkward and clunky, where it was like going down a checklist and it's like, and that's how he met Chewie and that's how he got the gun and that's how he got the ship.
And that's why his name's Han Solo.
Yep. And it wasn't nearly as awkward or clunky in this, but you really felt like the machinery moving to align itself with the next movie.
Mm-hmm. And maybe it would have been better if they'd had five seasons. It would have been more subtle.
Yeah, it very well may have been.
Yeah, or even three or four seasons, even if they'd been able to spread that out a little more. You know, I definitely enjoyed it. I mean, I was hooked for the whole season.
No doubt.
I do think again, we watched them back to back. So the first season I think is a little bit stronger. And I think most of it to me was the way it felt like they had to rush it a little bit. And that, because man, I wanted to see more of just about everything.
Yeah.
You know, and I always felt like, like what's going on Gorum with people becoming rebels is so important in a way because the Empire creates the rebellion every place that it steps on.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I think the Gorum story was about, is how they created rebellion in people that had no interest in being rebels. They just wanted to sell clothing.
Mm-hmm.
The
finest clothing in the galaxy.
Finest clothing in the galaxy. And now rarest.
It felt like, I think one of my favorite things about Andor both seasons is just making it super clear that, like what fascism is, how fascism rears its head, how it acts, what it does to a people, how they're using the rebellion and Gorman to specifically get incompetent accelerationists involved so that they can squeeze tighter and crack down.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's
they want there to be a visible rebellion and murder.
If you hypothetically put like an army or an armed force in a populous urban area and you really like bust out the truncheons and really crack some heads and really try to like
the nation's capital.
Yeah. Just hypothetically,
maybe
you are trying to provoke violence so that you have an excuse to bust out more violence in response, right? It's a disproportionate response just waiting to happen. And you see that happening, and you see some of the rebels, realizing it, like Andor realizes it basically when he shows up to check them out and to see, you know, what's what, and to report back. And he's like, nah, these guys are clown shoes. We don't want this. And then later they kind of realize that, you know, how it's being set up like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And like
the language there too, a lot.
I mean, and the Empire is willing to sacrifice their own people. They bring in those green troops, and their only reason they're there is to die. They shoot them. Yeah. They shoot their own people.
Yeah, to kick it off.
And you know, that's something that you see a lot in, like we saw that in Minneapolis in 2020 during the uprising, with the Proud Boys and other instigators coming in, honestly, like genuinely coming in to instigate with the goal of creating unrest. And
you saw with the police. I mean, the police themselves were aggressive and unwelcome and making things worse everywhere they went with their brutality.
Yep. Well, sure. If you dress in riot gear, it's because you expect a riot. And if the protesters aren't going to start one, then you have to. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. And I think that was something that they showed really clearly. And maybe it was just, I don't know, maybe in my memory of, because we saw this as it came out, and so I haven't seen it since. Maybe in my memory of that, it feels more subtle than it was, you know, actually when I watched it. But in my memory, that it felt like it was a little bit more subtle, all of the ways that they were showing, you know, things going wrong and how things, and almost like sometimes I almost felt like they were doing there's bad people on both sides kind of a thing that I didn't love, you know, where it was like, but some of the rebels are being crazy, are being like a little too much too, right, guys? And like they're a little too aggressive and too excited about stuff. And I don't think that was the intention of the show, but I feel like to some degree they're sometimes storytelling tries to be more balanced, and I felt like season one didn't try to be balanced at all. Season one wasn't trying to tell a balanced story, even when it came down to things like the group of train heist people, you know, who were all that were all working together, and then you got the, you know, you've got Ebon Moss Bachrock being the traitor guy and all that, or was he? We don't know, but there was no subtlety there, right? It was, and Andor feeling very confident about all the decisions he made. And so maybe that just comes with age, and maybe it's because the story jumped by such leaps that we didn't get to see that year of character growth. And so it can feel a little jarring that these characters lived a whole year under, you know, on Yavin 4. There's a part where they've lived a whole year on Yavin. And so, of course, that's going to change them a little bit. But to me, it's just been an episode. And so it can feel a little bit like the characters' reasons, raison d'etre or whatever, has like slightly changed. Yeah.
Raison d'etre.
Raison d'etre.
Yeah. Oh, man.
Yeah, go ahead, Nick.
No, I was just thinking about Clea.
Yeah.
How she lives and she, you know, makes it to join the rebels on Yavin. I think this was that actor's first big thing. This was like their breakout role.
Yeah.
She hasn't really done much acting in
she was fantastic
movies or TV before this. I would absolutely watch like a during episodes 4, 5, and 6 spy show with her. I'd like to see more of her character. I think it's interesting that her contributions kind of seem to be eclipsed by Andor showing up in Yavin and what he did. And I just feel someone said like at the end of episode 4 when you know Luke and everyone's getting their medals at the medal ceremony, she's just off on the sidelines being like, what the fuck, who are these guys that just showed up? These guys showed up 5 minutes ago and I've been at this shit my whole fucking life. Like my life has been dedicated to this since I was a child who was like adopted by a rebel spy master.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
Uh, and I'm the reason we have the plans, basically, and all this shit. Like her and you know, she's the only surviving one really at this point.
Yeah, I tell you what,
where's her medal?
I would love a young Clea and Luthen series.
Yeah.
Watching all the subversive shit that they've been doing for years.
The kid that played her was really good. How about like young Clea with young Leia, right? Like that could be some crazy shit.
It could the show could be like K/Leia. I don't know. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Mm-hmm. They're something like that. Anyway,
that scene with her and Luthen with the detonator in the coffee shop when they're on Naboo, mm-hmm. and they're talking about like, no, we're making a point. This is where the Emperor is from. This is his home planet. That's why we have to do it here. And I was just like, oh man. Have we like seen much? This is the first live action Naboo that we see after the prequels. Mm-hmm. I think we never go back in the sequel trilogy. They don't show it at all. I mean, obviously it's not in the original trilogy. I think this is like the only time we really see the Empire on Naboo.
Yeah.
And what things are like there on the Emperor's homeworld.
Yeah, I think too. I felt like so much happened between episodes, you know, that I wanted to see, and so maybe they'll someday put out something, you know, or even I don't know, maybe they'll make a comic or something. I mean, they would do that more often these days, but it a lot of the times we would sit down to watch it because we were watching it weekly, and we would sit down to watch it, and it would be like 12 months later, and it's like what? Like, yeah. What just happened?
I always love a chance to see more Saw Gerrera, and he's in this mm-hmm. a bit with the energy converter rebel. Like they're teaching them how to do the energy siphon or whatever.
More leftist fighting each other.
Yeah, more leftist infighting. But that the whole crazy fucking speech he gives about like we're the fuel for the get burned up, we're the like as they're talking about stealing the volatile starship fuel, mm-hmm. and then you find out he's like huffing rhydonium gas
which I know will burn
from the inside out, and that's why he's on the respirator and all that
sounds the way he does. And
I saw a great meme that was him from Rogue One when he's talking to the rebel leaders. And it's just like, they don't realize right now that man is high as fuck. He is like huffed out of his gourd on starship fuel.
Ben Miles, who plays Mothma's banker friend, the one that gets killed.
Yeah.
I want to say, I thought that he played that character really well, because in the first season, you're like, oh, this guy's probably going to end up being someone important, right? Like, but then that moment, and you can just see the greedy, rich person cunning in his eyes when he's like, well, I guess what I'm wondering is, you know, what is this worth? You know, what is this? What's going to, where am I? I'm not getting taken care of. How am I supposed to get to? And like, and the fact that Mothma instantly, when she hears that, is like, you can see in her head, she's like, oh fuck, oh no, because like I trusted the wrong person.
Go and ruin it all.
Yep. And but like honestly, they're very lucky that he got greedy so fast, and that he had that problem, whatever it was that lended, that made him cash poor, that made him get all mm-hmm. oh, and he's looking around, lavish wedding, must be nice, you must be getting paid from this so-called rebellion. And it's like, no, that's not what this is, you know. But like the fact that he revealed himself to be genuinely not ever actually for the cause, right? You know, just he was playing rich people games and having fun, and when it didn't suit him anymore, he wanted to get paid and got taken off the board, which was good, because if it had gone longer and he'd been brought in more and knew more, it could have all been over right there.
I was thinking more about Luthen, and he has that cane and the robes mm-hmm. that he wears for a lot of this fancy ship. And a lot of people, including myself, were kind of theorizing that he might have been like an ex-Jedi.
Mm-hmm.
I'm so glad he wasn't. I'm so glad he was just like a soldier who saw the horrors of war and the horrors of the Empire, and was just like, nope. And mm-hmm. and he, like, you know, just very dedicated single track mind, was going to like, no, I'm going to fucking take down the Empire. And he basically did.
Yep.
Though, speaking of force sensitive, the one force thing we get in the whole series I really liked, that was the force healer on Yavin.
Oh yeah.
Everyone is like, she's a quack, but it's worth a try for, like, her, you know, her basically her Jedi Reiki that she does. And it doesn't work on anyone, and Cassian's like, yeah, whatever. And then she sees him and she feels something in the Force, clearly. And it's not just like a cold reading thing. I think it's legit, whatever happens.
Because he's important and the Force
points
it out.
See the thread of that he's, you know, woven into the fabric. His thread in Destiny is important in some way. And she kind of says that to Bix in a way that influences her to influence him to get back in the fight.
Mm-hmm.
But then also she is able to use the Force to, like, fix his burns a little bit too. And I think that it was used so sparingly. She's not a Jedi. She's just a person who's a little bit Force sensitive in some way. Also, we got to see someone do Force healing that wasn't either, you know, some barely canonical Old Republic thing or what Rey does in the in the sequel trilogy. And I thought it was used very sparingly to great effect.
Yeah, because I think one of the things about this series is it's supposed to be about the non-Jedi hero order, right? The whole point is that the Rebellion was mostly not a bunch of Force-sensitive or, you know, people who are force sensitive but didn't realize it, right? Because, you know, you can be force sensitive and it makes you a really good pilot, but that's all it makes you is
you're not a force user.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. The Force just kind of helps you out a little bit.
Everyone can feel it. It's just whether or not you're aware that you can feel it.
Yeah.
That's the thing. Like, it flows through and in everybody and everything. It's everywhere.
Yeah. I mean, maybe it flows through Mon Moth in a way that makes her a really good public speaker, which is sadly a useless skill in the Empire.
but it was useful for rallying people to the cause and for, like, standing up against the Empire.
You know, if I can say one thing that I find watching Rogue One immediately after, one thing that bugged me is that there's the scene where, you know, they come and they say there's this Death Star and we have to get this information because we have to destroy it. And there's one of the leaders, one of the members of the leadership council is like, nope, this is a deal breaker. We just have to turn ourselves in. And it bugged me that nobody said, what do you think the Emperor is going to do with us if we turn ourselves in?
Yeah. Turn ourselves in for what?
Yeah. Uh-huh. What is the benefit of that action to any of us? If we're all going to end up dead because of the Death Star, we're all going to end up dead if we turn ourselves in. So maybe we should try to fucking destroy the Death Star. I think season two of Andor actually kind of drives that home, how you have one choice with the Empire, and that is resistance or
violent resistance.
Yeah. Violent resistance. And that's where the Luthen storyline comes in, because Luthen realizes very early that your only means is violent resistance, and it takes
fascists only speak one language.
Yeah, and it takes a really long time for a lot of other people who absolutely hate the Empire to realize that Luthen is right. Anyway,
any final thoughts as we wrap up here?
Yeah, two quick things. So the actor that plays Dedra, Denise Koff, so she has been so incredibly visible and publicly involved in protests against the genocide happening in Palestine.
Excellent.
Right now. She has been very, very visible, very vocal, And it's really great to see her being in this clearly like anti-fascist Star Wars show and then like taking it into the real world and really running with that. And then I just remembered one of my favorite parts from the show.
Oh, yeah.
When we were talking about Cyril's death, when he sees Cassian and he's like, you and all that. It's just such a hollow death for him in that Cassian's response is, who are you?
Who are you?
Yeah.
And he doesn't even know who he is. It's been years.
His whole life.
And it's this whole thing like Cyril throws away his life.
Yeah.
In an attempt to catch this guy who doesn't fucking matter.
Yeah.
For a guy that it's that Mad Men quote, you know, I feel sorry. Sometimes I think about you and I feel sorry. I don't think about you at all.
It's the title of the episode. Who are you?
Yeah. Yeah.
No, it
yeah.
really,
oh
like,
my God.
It was such a like, fuck yeah, that. Man. Yeah.
Yeah.
Which also I think really underscores the idea that like he threw his life away for what? Like, for what? Because to be honest, shitty cops got killed.
Yeah.
Like, in the line of duty, a thing that you're supposed to do, like, that's your job, you know? And then, like, this guy got
yeah, they were corrupt cops anyway. They were just trying to shake him down anyway.
Yeah,
They picked a fucking fight. They fucked around and found out.
Yep. And so, you know, he was that true believer in the lie of the empire, the law and order and justice and, you know, truth, the way of the galaxy. We're going to make everything better for everyone. And like, yeah.
He's gonna make eggs cheaper. The emperor is going to make the republic great again.
Nobody will be woke anymore. And instead you just got shot. Tim, any final thoughts?
I was gonna say there's a deleted scene which I actually kind of wish was in there, because one of the kind of unresolved things is Mon's relationship with her husband,
and
the deleted scene
in the car afterward, right?
Yeah, the deleted scene actually indicates that before she leaves, he tells her that he's known all along what she's been doing.
Mm.
Oh,
and
fuck.
That the Empire has been, the ISB has been interviewing him every week. And he's been lying for her the whole time.
Oh, man.
And I just love that layer to that character who seems like he's just
a drunk playboy.
Yeah. And actually, no, he has been supporting her quietly the entire time.
Yeah.
Well, and like, they were an arranged marriage, you know, and like they really, you can really see that she's like, I don't want this for you, for her daughter. And her daughter can be like, you know, but why? And it's like, I can't say, I don't love your dad. Like, that's not how it's going to go down. But like, man, like.
Yeah. So anyway, that's one of those things that it is out there. You can find the deleted scene, I guess. But
I'm gonna.
Or information about it. Anyway,
I think he's a great actor.
What about you, Mon?
Yeah, that's actually what I was going to bring up. That guy,
the husband.
Yeah, I think the husband is a underrated character who is usually in fiction stories. We have a wife who's left behind, a wife who feels ignored.
Sure.
The wife is the one who's like, oh, missing dinner again, you know, and like, so there is just the gender flip is nice, but just the fact that like, you know, she is mean to him. Like Mon Mothma feels like this paragon of virtue for so much of the stuff. But then we see these scenes where like, it reminded me of my mom and dad, where my dad stayed home with the kids. My mom was a high powered, you know, like had a high powered job at a VP level. And like, sometimes like they were mean to each other over, you know, their shared resentments of, you know, she resented that he got to spend all this time with the kids and to her mind, just be hanging out and relaxing. And he wanted to have a job, you know? And like, it was, I just really thought that that was some good subtle acting. Pretty much every character in this show is three dimensional. Other than Cyril's mother, who's just a cunt, but like, he's just a miserable cunt. And she seems to enjoy hurting people. That seems to be her whole deal. But every single show had a lot of, or every single character in the show had depth. Even the droids, you know, even the little droid that doesn't actually say words, right? That just sort of like beeps and bops and is every now and then is like, you know, basically, I can't remember, like, is it Marla or like...
Morla.
Yeah, where is she? And it's like, she's gone. But like, yeah, I really... I really liked it. I wish Bix had some more depth, or that I guess that her depth wasn't such a trope for a female character to go from, oh, she's badass and strong. Let's see how badass and strong she is after she gets raped. You know, like it just that's a very tropey thing to have happen.
That was the first attempted sexual assault in Star Wars, I think, that
shown.
Yeah, well.
Pretty sure she's not the first.
Yeah, person. Well.
I mean, that happens on Bitford to Bix in the on that farming world that they're on. That was kind of a risky thing for Star Wars.
It was implied to me that it had happened to her multiple times during her torture.
So that
to me is why I felt like she ended up snapping and shooting that guy. Yeah. But in any event, I just wanted to say, I just thought that the depth of character was really great. Tony Gilroy's a great.
Yeah,
I don't know if I know he didn't write everything, but since he is the show creator, I thought he did a really good job with this. I look forward to more. I look forward to more, you know, blank a Star Wars story, because so far I've really enjoyed everything that they've done that's been, you know.
Yeah, right now things are up in the air on a lot of stuff that they've announced. So we'll see what happens.
Oh,
there.
Really?
Yeah.
Thing. I don't keep up with that stuff. So
the only thing I know that was like they're talking about very concretely is the Starfighter show that they just announced that
Pignataro?
Matt Smith is going to be the villain of.
Oh, okay.
Which
interesting.
I think is great. I can't remember.
We love to see former Doctor Who favorites become villains, horrible villains. David Tennant did a great job as Purple Man, so I would love to see Matt Smith as a fucking Sith.
Ryan Gosling is the Star.
Oh, nice.
As a pilot. And the only other person that's attached is Mia Goth, who I also really like a lot. So
yeah,
I don't know anything more than
exciting.
That. Other than it sounds like it's the most concrete Star Wars thing happening.
Well, this has been our wrap up of Andor Season 2. If you enjoyed it, please let us know what you think. As always, we are happy to hear your comments. We're on Blue Sky and Facebook. You can find us both those places. You can always email us. You can email either of our first names or all at geeksofthatgod.com, and we will get those. Follow us on both of those two social medias, or join our Patreon and get episodes early. We have a few Patreon exclusive episodes. We haven't done one in a long, long time. We need to think of one. If you can think of something that you would think would be a very cool idea that's just for Patreon subscribers, that maybe costs a little money and therefore is an investment, we'll love to hear about it. Otherwise, we will see you next Tuesday. Bye.
Bye. Well, I guess we're never going to get that Ahsoka Andor crossover series now.
We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God. We don't recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks without God.
Need more Geeks Without God? Go to our website, read our blog posts, find us on Facebook, or follow us on Twitter at Geeks Without God.
Social media!
We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God.
We don't want to think about things anymore.